Welcome to the Winners and Losers radio program, broadcasting Fridays here on Enlightened Radio at www.enlightenedradio.org. And today, our host, Karen Ballantyne, and Larry Bish are going to join us, and myself, John Case, and we're hoping that Peggy McGowan from the CATF will join us, too. We open the show here with the usual desultory conversation, you know, that Karen and I have to start the show. Anyway, welcome, and check us out at www.enlightenedradio.org, also our podcasts at podcast.enlightenedradio.org, and if you're on a cell phone and you can't see our player on the regular website, go to player.enlightenedradio.org, and we'll be there. Welcome. Well,
Fill me in.
I was reading about the plays, and so there's a AI theme in one of them, and the other one seems to be a here comes Larry. Oh, good, he can join us this morning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there he is. Look at him. He's not dead yet.
Larry, nice to see you.
Hey, Larry, we're going to have, hopefully we're going to have as a guest this morning, Peggy McGowan, right? And she's the new director of CATF. And I was just letting, I haven't seen any of the plays, and I don't think we're going to go this year for some reason. We usually go to the cheap seats in the when they're trying it out in the beginning, right here, you know, they have a preview of the place.
Yeah, I was like that, yeah.
That used to only cost about $10 instead of 50 or something, you know, so. Anyway, this year they have the theme of what happens when your only relationship now is with an AI character. You know? You know, which I thought was kind of, okay, that's kind of interesting, you know, to put on.
Well, it's kind of appropriate for where we are in the world, but I don't know if I want to explore that too much, but whatever.
Right, this is that. Right. I know, we're not ready for that, you know, so. Anyway, then there was some, there's one that's a soliloquy, single, wrote it. And performs it, and there's no other actors, kind of thing. So that would be a kind of Hamlet kind of situation, perhaps. And and there's a number of others that are. You have to go back and look at them. And there's a theme of, I think, about anti-racism in a number of the plays. That's. They actually have a special session on, actually. Anyway, so it should be interesting. And is this Peggy's first year as succeeding the famed guy whose name I can't remember right now? Who ran
Ed Herendeen.
Ed Herendeen, yeah.
Was the kind of mastermind and this was his baby.
Yeah,
this was his baby. And, I don't know if Peggy took over last year or if this is her first full year. I don't know the answer to that because I wasn't around.
Right. Okay. So, and of course, I'm sure that Larry, in his career of 80 or 180 jobs, I can't remember how many, you know, at some point had an acting gig. So, anyway, and by the way, the actors are out on strike. I believe. Yeah. Well, no, they're not out on strike yet. The negotiations broke down completely. That's what the report is this morning.
They haven't called to bring you in yet, John?
Well, I don't. You know, when people go out on strike and then they call you for advice, I mean, what else can you say? But I suggest that you start picketing. You know? I mean, I had guys call me that one time. Hey, we just walked out of the shop. I said, whoa. Has the contract expired? No. Well, I suggest you start picketing and, watch out for replacements. So, anyway.
How are you, Larry? Good to see you.
Oh, I'm cool, Karen. How are you?
Good. I know you're cool. That goes without saying.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Yeah. A little tired.
Yeah.
Old.
That's to be expected, I would suppose. But it's good to see your smiling face.
Yeah, thanks. So you're off treatments this week or something?
Yeah, last week I had a treatment. That's why I wasn't here.
Yeah, right.
And then I have a buried kind of reaction to it, you know. This week's kind of lasting.
Yeah.
But
well, we have, a number of friends, you know, like I know Zaki, you know, he's going, they're going to his treatments, you know, although he got a good report the last time I heard, you know, so that's good.
I've seen a lot of that. I have another friend I worked with at the jail, Aaron Mann, and I saw him pop up on Facebook in a hospital bed, just got out of surgery.
Right.
He's a young guy.
Right.
I've seen a lot of it. But there, you know, I'd have been dead 15 years ago, you know, if it wasn't for the advances in medicine.
That's for sure.
People that had my problem just died, you know.
That's right. You know, I can remember, half of my family, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's, well, we're in the middle of July. Okay, it's hottest ever, at least in some places. And by the way, there was a little cell. What's going on with these little micro cells that are, part of these weather pattern, right, where it just hovers over a single town. Like, for example, I heard Montpelier, Vermont, all of a sudden... Oh. And there's a town between here and Baltimore, too, that it happens to all the time.
Ellicott City,
you know, where somehow the cloud just hangs over there and floods the place.
That's where I was born. That could be why.
I don't know.
It's 7:35. You want to give any chance you could give a buzz to Gabrielle and see whether...
Sure. Let me text her. Yep.
Text her, see if she's mm-hmm. gonna come on or not.
Yeah, we're supposed to visit a daughter in Vermont first week in August, and talking to her, it's really bad. You're talking about, John. The weather
right.
is incredibly bad. So Bernie Sanders had a special on YouTube. I don't know if you guys saw it. Had Bill McKibben on there. And
yeah, I saw an ad for it. I didn't actually watch his discussion.
Oh, ACO's hosting, co-hosting it with him. It was all right. It was pretty good. Basically telling you what you already know, though. Personally,
right.
I think we're pretty well screwed.
Did he address what happened in Vermont with the... I mean, that was a very strange weather event for them.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten snow before it goes up like that, but, you know, rarely rain.
Basically, he said what I've been saying. Move or die.
So...
Get going, but, you know, what's required, I don't see how...
Move north, move away from the equator, right? How do you do that if you can't?
I meant was that get off your butt.
Do something, you know, change the
equation.
But
what has to be, according to everybody I see, what has to be done, this seems like human impossibility.
You know, doing anything, though, requires a certain level of unity.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't have to have everybody, but you got to have enough to say, oh, yeah, we got to go this way, you know, and I'm not sure we're there yet.
the urgency keeps ramping up.
It does, but I mean, there seems to be like, you know, some systematic or institutional blockers that just make it, and then there's the media, which
I
don't even
what,
know
what Bernie talked about more than anything else was fossil fuel, and so did McKibben, same thing, and that's what's holding us up is power, and that particular power, yeah. And that they're not the amount of change. First of all, what we really need to do, according to these guys, is shut that down. No more. We can't afford to burn any more oil or coal.
Well,
we do it, we're shortening our lifespan.
Uh-huh. Shut it down. All down. Right now.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Mr. McKibben is going to survive that.
I don't either.
Shutting it all down.
I don't think he has to worry about it.
When the lights go out and the power's off, you're in an electrified country. I mean, where, you know, you don't have a barn full of food. And this can't be done just by, if you shut it all down, you'll get everybody's attention pretty quick, but.
I can't picture it.
Yeah, right.
But I think it all started down at Tubes, Citizen United. And, history repeats itself.
Yeah.
The rich people aren't necessarily smart.
Well, you know, speaking of that, there was a comedy show on CNN the other day where they were interviewing Jamie Dimon, and the CEO of, J.P. Morgan Bank, the biggest bank by far in the country. Now has all over 10% of U.S. deposits. Anyway, he was saying he's not a big fan of Bidenomics.
You think?
You know, this is a liberal billionaire, okay, who's hates Trump, all right, but he's not a big fan of Biden. He's thinking of jumping ship. After he says that, then they ask him, well, are you thinking of running for president? No, I'm not thinking about that. And then, what about a cabinet position? Well, maybe. Anyway, so you're listening to this and you're wondering, whoa. And then I saw yet today that that Bill Gates, he's going to have some second thoughts too. He also hates Trump, but you know the federal Trade Commission, Commerce Commission, it is going after his Microsoft's acquisition of Activision, which is probably the largest gaming company. Well, them and Unity, in which Microsoft already has a stake. And then that can't please them. That's a big deal. Also, actually, the interesting thing is Activision is unionized. Which most tech companies are not. So, any word from our friend Gabriel?
I texted and I haven't heard anything back. So it might be up. I'm not sure what could have happened. It was
I did respond to her.
No, I saw the email that you sent. It could have just been a miscommunication between she and Peggy, but I mean, they were very interested. So if not today, it'll be another day.
All right. So let me, since we're on the subject of the plays, I just want to read part of this interview here with the play that is about when you have an AI. How are you going to relate to the machine, kind of thing here?
I'm trying to see which is that.
That's the first one. I think it's the overview effect, I believe.
The overview effect.
No, that's not the. That's about space. Okay, so we got to. Where is the one? Maybe it's redeemed. Yes. No, that's not it. But redeemed is about someone who goes to visit in prison some guy who killed her brother or friend. Oh, here it goes. This is called means. What's it called here? Your Name Means Dream, a world premiere by Jose Rivera. Aslan is getting older. She suffers the inevitable indignities of being human and hates technology. Stacy, her caregiver, is perfectly toned, doesn't age, and is utterly in control because she's an AI entity. And there's a new algorithm out there called AOS, or Approximation of Soul.
Oh, Lord.
Does Stacy have it? Oscar nominee and Obie-winning Jose Teixeira examines how we live, die, and form our sense of self in a world that's increasingly saturated with technology.
So are you saying the caregiver is a bot?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Stacy.
Right.
Stacy is a bot. And so this is obviously, so there's a interesting play, right, with the, I mean, that's a little interesting to me. And then we have this one, Redeemed. Redeemed spins a story over the course of two fictional prison visitations between Claire Yang, a woman whose brother was murdered 9 years ago, and Trevor Barlow, the murderer. Having sent Clara a letter begging for a visit, Trevor tries to prove he's now a changed man thanks to the help of her brother's ghost. Claire must decide if Trevor is capable of redemption or just attempting to impress the parole board.
Da da da
da da da da da da, and then there are there is a soliloquy called Spiritus Virgil's Dance. I don't know. And then there's this one.
The one I want to see is Fever Dreams. The last one.
Here's that one. For decades, Adele and Zachary have rendezvoused in a remote cabin in the woods to celebrate their passion and be together. This year, though, something is different. The place is falling apart. A sense of loss pervades the air. They're both keeping secrets. And Adele has brought a gun, one that belongs to her longtime husband. Fever Dreams, Animals on the Verge of Extinction, that's the title, is an unfolding mystery about the cost of lies, the price of truth, and the consequences of long overdue revelations. So there you go. I left out the description of the soliloquy. I mean, and so it's difficult to tell what that'll be about. But anyway, so that's the lineup. And, you know, as usual with the art festival, I assume that Peggy's going to continue with this thing. You know, a lot of writers who want to see, you know, basically put their play on before it's really finished in some cases, right? So you have, maybe it's too long, or maybe, you know, you want to get an audience reaction, get a bunch of actors to try to put it together and see what happens. And sometimes even within the course of the festival, matter of fact, I think it's fairly often within the course of the festival, the writer is here and they do significant editing, you know, shorten it or change it or do different things. And occasionally out of it comes, you know, a big success. There's been several.
There have been.
Some turned into, you know, movies and stuff like that. So anyway.
Well, I have been noticing in town almost on a almost a daily basis on the weekends and even Thursdays, because the plays are running, there have been buses, tour buses, parked.
Oh, right.
So they,
right.
They are definitely a huge success. And I've had friends from different parts of the country, probably not the world, but the country, ask me, oh, are you going to any plays? I just read about the theater festival that's in your town. So that it has become a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually, I'm not quite sure how Ed and now Peggy will manage to attract, keep all the actors that have to be involved. And that must be quite an effort there. Takes a lot of connections. So I hope that Peggy's efforts will succeed and keep going, because it's definitely a great draw for Shepherdstown and for Jefferson County here in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. So Larry, do you appreciate or enjoy live theater?
No, I would, but I haven't. And I did one of the stepdaughters acted in those plays at Shepherdstown. And so my wife would go see her, but I never did. I wasn't around. We might have been having an argument or something. No, I was never involved.
I've enjoyed the plays that I have gone to see. I was more involved with the CATF when I first came to Shepherdstown, and then kind of got priced out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And then, but I have always enjoyed the plays. I did come to a conclusion that I think every piece of live theater should be under 2 hours.
Well, probably the ones that are more than 2 hours do get trimmed down somehow during the festival, I think. But
yeah, I remember seeing one that was about close to 2.5 hours, and basically that leaves you with being a critic of how many scenes could have been cut out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, everybody becomes a critic. Yeah, right, exactly. Well, on the question of the, when I was thinking about the one about the AI entity or caregiver, Stacy. You know, an AI system is a lot more like a collective entity than an individual one. You know, its sources are millions of users in a way. I mean, and so it's a very I know we dramatize these kind of relationships, and you look for a way to stage it and stuff like that. I might be interested in seeing what you actually had to say about, you know, this relationship to technology.
You know, well, I think we all are questioning that, right? I think I read that even Elon Musk is predicting that AI is going to be smarter than the human race in 5 years. I think he came out with that.
Yeah. I don't see how it could not be.
Right.
You know, and it's right up there with all the experts throwing out, hey, this is going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it as being the kind of problem you might envision, like robots, you know, keeping house for you and then taking over. I don't think that's
that euphoria of the Jetsons is just that. I think what we're in for is, I don't think they made a cartoon about it.
You know, most of the threats, though, arise from the fact that you have such conflict in the world, and therefore a powerful technology like that could,
the thing.
You know.
Who's going to grab a hold of it and use it?
And use it as a weapon. Or
yeah. Right.
I mean, you could, in theory, have an AI general that could basically command a battlefield. And you know, that could be possible. maybe for a while they'll make him a colonel before they make him a general. I don't know, but
he has to be promoted.
Then you find out that there's this guy running around the country running for president. But actually, when the presidency's election's over, you find out it's not human at all. So
that sounds familiar.
Yeah,
so. I think we've already lived that one.
You know, right.
At least twice.
So I don't know, but
I don't know either. And then what kind of commemorative statues would be put up? Would they be like green screens, like virtual, you know, how we're tearing down all the Confederate statues? Like, yeah, how will we, how right, will we memorialize these AI generals?
I mean, it gets pretty difficult to judge past history by current standards. I mean, if you go back too far, I mean, what happens if we have to pass a resolution in Congress condemning the Roman Republic? I mean, yeah, there's a point at which it does. What? They're not listening. I don't know.
You trying to interact with, say, even millennials, you get to experience something our grandparents had to experience, and that is that we have the advantage of seeing the timeline firsthand of history, and they read about it. It's not real to them. And,
right,
as real. I don't know if the next generation is gonna jump in there and save us.
Well, they're gonna do something sort of to us.
Yeah, that's how I feel. They're gonna do something.
I know. Well, one of the other play, for example, one of the other, the one about, you know, we're going to meet in a cabin in the woods with somebody, right? That some extra. There have been plays like that. There have been some plays like that before. Like back in the 40s and 50s, there was a couple of Somerset Maugham stories, I remember, that, you know, you would head over to you would head to Shangri-La on some spiritual mission. And you would end up, you know, in a close quarters with, you know, a bunch of characters, right? And you would start to, you know, fall in love, have arguments, have fights, you know, see visions, whatever, that were somehow disconnected. And then you would leave the place and try to go back, and you felt like you had lived an ideal existence of some sort, and then try to fit back into the real world, the historical world, whatever. And you find things out about yourself by that retreat and then back. A good framework for a story, you know. But.
Mm-hmm. Do you get a something like that from meditation?
Oh, yeah?
I do. You know, it's interesting that you asked that. I'm planning on taking some time to spend with myself. I can tell that I need it. I can tell that it's always when I get the time to truly stop and meditate and be with just me that me and my mind are pretty idyllic. It's when I have to come back into the world.
Yeah, man.
You don't want to come back.
Just like that cabin in the woods John was referring to.
You want to go right to sleep and never wake up.
Right, right. You know, that's true.
Well, how about synchronicity? Seeing a lot. Maybe it's just me, but I'm seeing a lot about that. And I think the closer you get to understanding Jung in a collective consciousness, the more you'll see. see the synchronicity because it's by. Most people just goes past.
Yeah.
But it can get downright spooky. Anyway, I told you last time I talked to you, I was reading this guy here, this Harari.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Okay, he's written one. My kids give me these. one is called Sentient. Is his bestseller. And then this is 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. Anyway, the kind of thing I'm talking about, synchronicity and meditation, I open it up. And each chapter has, kind of enjoy this, each chapter has a, it's like a standalone essay.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things like work, liberty, equality, community, God, terrorism, war, humanity, despair, and hope. And he's quite the philosophical young guy, he's a Jewish guy. But I opened it up yesterday and he's got one on meditation. And when I was living in Pennsylvania, I said we have arguments sometimes. We don't have any more, but we used to. And I was living in a cabin up there and doing whatever, like you were saying, Karen, and I took care of myself. And I saw a bad, and I went to a 10-day silent meditation retreat. And I had never meditated or thought of it. But that 10 days is an experience that would almost take 10 days to relate. And life-changing, really is. But it's a Vipassana type of meditation was centered on the breath, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty easy to learn. By the end of 10 days, I'd had experiences like you sit cross-legged and it hurts. Sit cross-legged and then that pain just went away. And I had never experienced that. And there were a series of things like that that would happen, and they were all subjective. And it revealed a kind of an inner world. Anyway, this author, the first thing in that chapter on meditations, he had the same experience. And he says he meditates 2 hours a day. And he described the 10-day silent retreat. He just did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have them now in different places.
Right.
But, what would I say? I highly recommend it. Well, yeah.
How many people were there, besides yourself?
There were quite a few. And silent is silent. You don't even meet another's eyes. You know, mm-hmm. you're in your own thing.
Right.
And yeah, I have thought about how little adults take time for silence and how we have bombarded children's brains with everything but silence and how that is fundamentally going to change evolution. Because we have referred back to each of our own childhoods where we had time. You know, I didn't experience boredom. I experienced time that I didn't have anything to do. So I just sat and looked at the clouds. I remember taking blades of grass and pulling them apart. You know, but it was fun. I mean, I wasn't bored. I was just kind of looking at each strand that I could get out of a blade.
Yeah, I was a little boy, so I took daddy long legs and tore them apart.
See, there you go.
That's what little boys.
but that is something that fundamentally and collectively worries me about how we are going to evolve based on the chaos that we present ourselves with every day. And, you know, we're doing that to children. That's why, you know, I applaud the many schools now that are taking the time for meditation. and bringing that into the school setting, in the classroom.
Yeah. Right. I've had that thought many times. That this should be something taught since childhood. And I think some cultures it is.
Let me ask a related question, since I had a long discussion with a friend last week about this. If there's a lot of times they say you and another person have a dispute or a disagreement about some value laden problem, okay? Either a moral or and it can be political, but not just a political, but a political disagreement that reflects value differences. And that challenges your relationship with the other person. Okay. So my friend was saying that, if you take that issue and you go talk to another 10 different people about, and somewhere in the conversation, you see what, do they think that this difference of opinion or this difference in values is important? And if you talk to 10, then why not talk to 100 or 1,000? And the more voices that you talk to, well, the problem will either seem less important based on all the people you talk to, or it might become more important. In other words, a lot of people might share the same value challenge if we don't take the time, because this power of collectivity, so to speak, cooperate, I don't know what the right word is, but to find a truth that by yourself you're not going to find. I don't know. So that it seems to me that there's the meditative aspect, but that's alone. But then there's also the issue of, how you get to what's really important from the standpoint of what people can do, what power they have. Now, for most people, their only power is solidarity. I mean, unless you got a lot of money to buy the tools of power, okay. Your only power is solidarity, really. And you can't get there by yourself. I don't know. So it's just, it was so interesting. We were talking about
John. How's the solidarity going on? I'm seeing satires on labor shortages. I saw one sign on a McDonald's. You can't quit. Once you're here, you can't quit. Sorry. it was policy. Hard to find a help at Walmart, where you are, Karen, how are they going to pick the fruit? How are they going to do that? So what's this guy doing? Is that what you have to do? And I just watch it and say, sorry, ass shit, man.
Yeah, and I question, are they going to even appreciate the fruit enough to pick it? is there even going to be that connection, and I worry about that. But then you see, I have a lot of hope. You do see a lot of goodness happening and people that really are striving to keep those connections alive. And then John, the struggle that you're talking about with that dichotomy of what do we do with it? And, I'm just a little tired at this point in my life, and I get mad at myself because I should be doing more. And I think just me being myself and walking through this earth and, just living by example, maybe that's enough, but it's really not. We're it's imperative that time is ticking, and So, you know, that's the tough one, like what to do with it and how to harness, you know, maybe wisdoms that we've learned or ways that are we could all be that are more peaceful, and what do you really do with it? Yeah, age old question.
You find yourself doing a review, like John. Everything flashes me somewhere. You're talking about well, jobs. And that one is when I was in my early 20s. I was up in upstate New York, and I needed a job. And the way I always did that is I had a lot of jobs because I just kept applying. The first guy to hire me for whatever I was qualified for, I did that. Because all I wanted to do is play guitar at night in a bar.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so this job was the same job that there's migrant workers everywhere, and there's a lot of them there in that part of New York, northwestern New York. And that was the job, working in a field. You know? And so I went and applied, and this guy's sitting at a desk, and there's a line of people, and I step up, and I'm the only white guy there, you know. And he looks at me, and he says, "We get up at 3:30 in the morning, and if we have to, we work till after dark. We're there all the time." And he explains this to me, and he's making it as horrible as he can.
Yeah.
And I say, okay. And he says, "You aren't going to be able to do this. I'm sorry." And he wouldn't hire me because I wasn't a migrant. And point being, Americans aren't going to do that job. They're just not. They're, you know, and so all these people that the Senate's kicking out of Florida are not going to be replaced by local young people.
I know.
That's not happening. Then the construction trade in Florida is down. I think they said a quarter of the workers they had that they need are showing up to work. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, what's he think's going to happen?
And there's what are
the farmers doing?
Speaking of political rumors, so I read one this morning. I read this on one of the writers on Bloomberg who, you know, you can't rely on this, but he's convinced. And some top, and he says, he claims that, you know, people inside Biden's, you know, circle of people he talks to agree that what's going to happen is that Trump is going to get the Republican nomination, and he's going to choose Robert Kennedy Jr. as his running mate.
Will Kennedy Jr. take that?
Who knows? You know, what?
Yeah, he's kind of a goofball.
And then I noticed, and then I see the liberal billionaires are not happy with Bidenomics. And so I start wondering, and then you see Joe Manchin, we met with the labor leadership here, and they were ridiculing this, that Joe's apparently running for president under with the No Labels group. It's not clear what he wants to achieve besides a spoiler kind of outcome. You know, he doesn't have any poll numbers that says he could win. So, you know, what are they? Yeah. What are all these forces doing? And you know, it's looking a little bit chaotic.
Looks like they're setting it up so that Trump has a better chance. You know, same thing happened the last.
Is it him, or is it, you know, something? I can't tell. You know, I mean, these MAGA guys, I mean, well, Trump, I don't know about the rest of them, but some of the rest of them may believe all this shit. I happen to know for sure that he doesn't. You know, with him,
yeah,
okay,
right.
It's yeah, complete right. Opportunism, okay? And and if it sells, if it gets you above above the fold of the newspaper, so to speak, it's gold. Doesn't matter what it says. And so you know, and just play to people's passions. And I mean, if he has to, he'll come. If it turns out that he think he could get something out of it, he'd appear at a union meeting and go, and hey, you go out to the actors in Hollywood, if, just so he could say, I'm in Hollywood too. Let's all go on. So I'll go on strike with you to help. I mean, he would do anything, and he would put forward any, you know, other than the fact that he, you know, him and his dad did admire Adolf Hitler, but. You know, so.
But he's already done that. He did that when he was running and won the presidency. He went to pro-abortion rallies.
He'll do whatever he, you know. And he
he played both sides openly.
So I mean, I'll go back to your, you know, like, what is Joe Manchin trying to accomplish? Now, you know, I'm not here to endorse Joe Manchin.
Right. No.
But I will say, I'm getting tired as a staunch opponent of the two-party system. John, you and I have talked about this. Until people start doing it and really like continuously break that mold in down. Like off
down
year
ballot.
Elections, down ballot elections, and in every way, local, state, and federal, until we start normalizing getting away from the tit for tat two party system, that change is not going to be effectuated. We're not going to get there.
I think you're right.
So it has to start, because we're having the same conversation that we had 10 years ago, that we had 15 years ago, and we are to the pinnacle of how destructive this two-party system is. I mean, there is absolute hate of one side and the other, and it's got to start somewhere. You know, everybody talked about, you know, Bernie being a spoiler and all, you know, if we don't start and keep pushing, we're not going to have change. You know, if we succumb to the fear of, oh gosh, if somebody else gets in, then Trump will win. You know what? Trump already won once. You got to keep fighting for something different. There is no reason in this day and age we should have a choice between two nearly 80-year-old guys who, in my opinion, aren't great either one of them. I'm not a huge Biden fan. Of course I would vote for him over Trump any day, and but we've got to get away from this feeling indebted and stuck in this two-party system. It's draining us. It's robbing us of creativity. It's robbing us of free thinking. It's really poisoning our culture.
Much, 100%. If any of that is intentional. Amen.
Oh, it's all intentional.
Intentional, right. And, you know, you watch another question I had to ask myself. I'm tired, too. I'm so tired. I canceled my Facebook. You know, it's just... It's people like me talking to people like me, but the question is, and then that they aren't even doing that anymore. Now they're just showing pictures of their cat, you know. Yeah. And but my real question is, how, if you watch C-SPAN and all, what is the deal? The only people making any sense at all, like Jared Ratzkin. And some of the Democrats, but then they say, is that me, or is this guy, this Republican, bellowing, and several of them now, big, deep voices, this guy stopping the military from
doing their job.
And it's because of abortion, you know. And they're so, listen to them, and I say, they can't be that stupid. I just can't.
No,
and is it true that their constituents that put them there. There's that many people that stupid. And then I say, Blair, that's got to be you. You're not giving them a fair listen. But I can't seem to find anything to agree with them. You know, they're saying crazy stuff. Wish I could think of some of it.
I think,
and they're forcefully doing it.
Oh yeah.
I'm with you. I was in Ranson yesterday, and just driving through Ranson, and I was stuck at the train there, and the guy in front of me, you know, his dog's head is hanging out the window. He's in his truck, and you know, just a perfect sight, except for the F Biden and F you if you voted for him. But it wasn't F, it was the full word. And I'm just sitting there thinking, this is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The minivan that was next to us was full of kids. And I just thought, the same thing that you're struggling with, Larry. Who are these people that think that there is anything appropriate about that? You know, just yuck, you know, but they scream patriotism. Well,
freedom.
Yeah. And it's freedom. Yeah, it's my freedom to vote for Biden if I want. So please keep that profanity off of your flag.
But he'll say it's my freedom to be profane.
I know it's, we've,
you guys, yeah. Remember when the F word, no one ever said it.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. You know, none of the adults in your life. They might have sworn like troopers. They might have used the N word endlessly. They didn't say the F word.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's every third world word anybody says on public television.
Well, that changed about 1970. It's been a while, Larry. So
yeah, right.
I've been appalled though at the use of it when, you know, these flags are flying. And you're right. I should always travel with a good camera, because there was a house in Delaware that had the F Biden flag flying, and it was their driveway just happened to be a school bus stop. And I always just wanted to snap pictures of the irony of all of this. Like, you know, you want to go to church and you want to take things back to 1950, the good old days, how it was, and everybody was so whole and white and proper. Well, look at your damn flag and all the kids on the school bus looking at it.
That's right.
You know?
And what does F. Biden imply?
Mm-hmm.
What's that imply? Okay, what are we gonna champion Trump? Really?
Well, but the thing is we that when they say they're patriots, was true patriotism. You never disrespected the president. You respected the freaking, you know, system of elections, and I mean this whole thing of that they are the true patriotic race. And then they'll fly a flag like that. Like, I mean, I remember as kids, you just would never disrespect the president, no matter. I remember as a kid not even knowing what party the president was, you know?
Right.
Yeah. You just respected the president.
Yeah, Ike and Maney,
right.
You know, didn't really think about him being Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but the,
The situation, I mean, you got to think about the things that changed that, you know, which was the 60s changed it. I mean, whatever people's memories or certain people's memories of the 50s, I mean, African-Americans' memories of the 50s are not quite the same as yeah, everybody else's. Okay, so, but that you know, the war, you know, the upheaval over civil rights, the assassinations of the president and his brother and Dr. King and Malcolm X.
My environment that's polluted that way. My own inner life is that way. That's the way I talk to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Profanity. That's the way I react to things I don't like.
Right.
And not only with profanity, with thoughts of violence. And I go, man, somebody's got to kill that guy. You know, and I'm thinking, that's not a good way to think. You know?
Well, it's,
you know, so yeah. It permeates everything.
I remember the, you know, if you had, I think if you had like an organization, going back to your original point there, Karen, about the stepping away from the two-party system, I think if you had an organization of 50 people, of which 15 were seriously really active, you could take over any job in the county you wanted. But you have to be disciplined, and you have to have the requirements are, one, you got to have discipline, which means unity, solidarity. You have to have internal ability to execute. Okay. And the other requirement is that you can't have your feet planted in the midair on policy. Okay. You can have principles that are, move you in the principal direction, but you can't be stupid, you know, and say, well, like for example, let's shut all the power in West Virginia down.
Oh, right.
Okay, you do that, and forget it, you know. I mean, you can believe that, yes, 100% with Bill McKibben, and I mean, that's where it has to go. But you can't get there unless you can get people together. I mean, just,
no, you still have to have middle of the road, if you will, tactics.
Practical.
And you
got
to
be practical. Yeah. If there's no mm-hmm. other way to finance education in West Virginia except by redirecting or changing the way the funds from the energy industry are collected and managed, well, then you have to go and do something about changing that relationship. Otherwise, everything you're going to do is pissing up a rope. Because you don't have any money to do any of it, and you can't go around telling people you're going to raise all their taxes, not in a poor state.
Yeah,
you know, you start doing that, and everybody, I can't afford to pay my current taxes, so you gotta make sense, you know, you can't advocate the impossible. But you got to have principles. I mean, for example, I'll tell you something that any county or town government can do is that just by using the bully pulpit of your position and the access to the press, and even without, you know, a legal remedy for wage theft, for example, yeah. which goes on everywhere, okay, you could stop it. You know, I mean, I'm telling you, if someone comes to the mayor and says, hey, you know, McDonald's regularly says you got comp pay for the time you come in instead of your day off. And then when you get you never get the pay, or you work overtime without compensation, you know,
straight
or all
time,
this other stuff that happens with the low wage stuff, you know, and, you know, I mean, all you got to do is go out and publicly and say, you know, by the way, you go to work at McDonald's and you probably are going to not get paid what you're told. Well, that would be a big slowdown in the applications for employment at McDonald's, I'll tell you right now. So, I mean, there's no end to, you know, what you could do, okay? And that would impress all kinds of people who basically don't even have the time to vote. Okay, right now,
two things come to my mind. One is, there's something in the system. My grandfather used to say, in a capitalist system, scum rises to the top.
Yeah.
Like pudding, he said. Just like pudding. Scum rises to the top. And so if somebody's making these decisions to not pay these people, what kind of asshole does that?
Oh, it's a take a manager of a McDonald's franchise. Okay, margin of profit in most of those places is at best 5% for the franchise owner. Okay, and that can be a lot if you got a lot of volume. Okay, you can still. I understand that if you get a McDonald's franchise, that you can probably pull down $100,000 a year. From a single franchise in income, okay, I mean, yeah. That independent of whatever the capital you got invested is worth, okay? But just in terms of
that income, isn't really that much money, John.
It isn't, you know, and that's why these guys want to own two or three.
Yeah. Okay. My kids make that much money.
Yeah, you know, so, but I mean,
thing, yeah.
And so, okay. McDonald's tells you everything that you have to purchase in terms of the food and the processes, and they set it all up. So you're not going to be able to get much paying the people. And so, you know, the managers, they're always skimming a bad week, a bad week, a bad week. And, you know, it's just, it's. You know, and they'll convince themselves, well, you know, that one, yeah, I owed her some money, but, you know, she gave me the finger on the way out the door, so I'm not going to pay her. you know, things like that. I mean, just.
Another thing that plays in here and isn't, I think, important if it's true. And it came out of that webinar about climate change. They all agreed we have about 6 years. Before we hit the tipping point of 3 or 4 degrees, then we're done. You know, we're
cooked on.
Really done like dinner, you know. food shortages, big migrations, desertification of agricultural places, you know, just you can look around and say, well, yeah, this could be a real problem, you know. Now you get things like this. Immigrant problems. There's nobody to do that work we're talking about. I don't know. Canada's on fire. Are you kidding me? They agreed. That's not how much fire, time right? We got.
Yeah. Okay. So, the North Pole is on fire.
It's okay. John and Carol are headed there. They'll put it out.
We're going to go take a cruise to Iceland and Greenland. We've been reading, but, you know, it's just the weather is changing.
Yeah.
Okay.
To go walk a dog.
We're at an hour, guys. Hour and 15 minutes, actually. So we made up for Peggy McGowan. We'll have to get her back, you know, and.
I will contact you on that, John, a little bit later today. I did receive a text message, so I'll get with you.
Okay.
Larry, always so great
did
to
she
chat
not,
with you.
Did she not get our contact right?
I'll contact you on that one.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Okay. Have a great day, both of you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy.